Welcome to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast, episode number 12. And today I have Oscar on and we're talking about investing. Hey, friend, I'm Sarah. And welcome to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast. I am here to show you that financial independence can be for anyone who wants it badly enough, and that investing in real estate doesn't have to be scary, take a vast DIY knowledge, or involve heaps of debt. When I am not sharing my own progress to FI, I'll be picking the brains of fellow like-minded, debt-conscientious investors. I am so glad that you are here, my fellow aspiring retirees. Hey everybody, this is Sarah and I'm here with Oscar today from Money Tip Feed, and this is take about 1000 for us because I had terrible weather trouble last week. So thank you, Oscar, for your patience. Oscar and I are talking today about personal finance, and I think he has a really more in-depth approach to investing than even I go. I'm just a very classic, basic index fund, like keep it simple person, and we'll go through that a little bit for new people, but I love picking Oscar's brain because he spent so much time learning about investments and it's very, very interesting. Before we begin, remind people how you got your account started and what you're passionate about.
Yeah, definitely. So my account started a couple of years ago. I've always had this idea. I've been wanting to write a book, and then I'm like, you know what? People don't really consume books anymore, or not as much. So I thought I could just do something on social media. It was a way to help I have two boys, 14 and a 9-year-old, to kind of help them, you know, and teach them about money. And then I was thinking, hey, you know, maybe I can reach out a few people and help them along the way. And that's really how it started. You know, that was the birth of Money Tip Feed. The way that I did the name was I wanted to spread money tips in a feed. So Instagram was a feed. And so Money Tip Feed, very, very non-creative.
I think it's very creative, actually. I really enjoy the name.
At first I was like, oh, does it sound too robotish? Like, should I put my name on it? People are going to think I'm one of these like Instagram bots. But no, I mean, it's done well. And it's, you know, it's even helped us. You know, I still find ways to, even to today, you know, ways to cut back my spending, measure where I'm making mistakes. You know, it's really helped. Hopefully it's helped a few people along the way finding new information, content. I know when I was younger, I always wanted to pick the brain of people that seemed to be successful with money.
Yeah.
So I hope that I can kind of give that back now, 20 years later. And, you know, the funny thing is it has also helped our family along, which is kind of funny.
What ways do you think it's helped your family out? Is it just more the like-minded community? Because I feel like you and I kind of talked to about you just where you live, you might feel like the odd person out. And then you surround yourself by this like debt-free community and this real estate community on Instagram. And you're like, oh, there's a ton of people like me that love spreadsheets too. And it kind of gives you a more sense of community when you're living this more frugal lifestyle.
Yeah. And in the sense of, you know, when you're saving and you're frugal and you're building wealth, you know, at one point is, okay, you know, how much more are you going to keep saving? And you know, can we just do a little bit more? Can we buy more things? And for me, just being, you know, buying material things, it doesn't do anything for me. Right. I actually struggle spending money, which is something I always have to work on. So I'll tell you a funny story. So I pay my kids around the yard if they work. I pay them $15 an hour.
Nice.
They're really lazy because they don't go out there much. I tell them, when I was your age, this is how much I had to work for that money.
Right.
But I was looking for my money and I realized since March 1st, I've only had $1 to my name and I still have that $1. And it's now June 15th.
That's amazing. I feel like I'm still kind of a spender. So I'm always impressed by people that have a hard time spending money.
And I'm to the other extreme. You know, I don't think it's healthy at times. You know, at times I'll force myself. Along the way, we've always done like a reward system. You know, if we've done well, if we crush the budget, if we do something on the investing side, you know, probably my wife is the one that gets the reward, but because she's been a trooper living this lifestyle. But yeah, and I think the debt-free community, you know, I think what I liked about it is, you know, it's you go around, you can meet some people, you talk to other people that are like-minded, because sometimes I struggle, you know, like I have friends that are not like-minded, and, you know, sometimes it's the constant, hey, let's go out, let's go out, let's go out. And, you know, sometimes you say no, and, you know, I could go out all the time and afford it, but I just yeah. have a hard time spending that much money socializing, you know? Right. So that, I think within my own family, they're not, you know, they're not frugal. So it's always been that, you know, like, I've always been a little bit different in that regard. So I do like the fact that social media, I think that's probably one of the biggest ways helped us. It's just saying, okay, you know, this is kind of normal and here are other people that are doing it.
Yep, definitely. And I think, yeah, because even among my coworkers, like I'm just known as like the more frugal person. And so if I make like big purchases, like kind of like, it sounds like in your family, if you ever do buy something, they're like, what is she doing? Are you okay with buying that like
right.
fancy blazers for, you know, this presentation? I'm like, it's yep. going to be okay.
Yeah. And I always laugh at work when I see, you know, like I see a lot of people going out like every day to lunch, and I'm always like, oh my God, how much does that cost? You know, $10 a day times five, that's 50.
And what was it that you do for a living?
I am an accountant. I work in corporate tax. So I work on, you know, preparing our corporate tax return, doing some of the accounting, doing some, when we buy or sell other companies, I'm involved in that kind of work. You know, and so a lot of people say like, oh, of course you've done well with money. You're an accountant. And, you know, there's a lot, when I first got into accounting, I remember like, you know, your first job is in public accounting. And the big thing out of college is, hey, as soon as you get your first paycheck, you have to go buy this fancy car so you can go take clients out.
I did that.
And I was like, and I'm like, wait a minute, you want me to go buy a $50,000 car to take your clients out to build up your practice? No.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, being an accountant, there's a lot of accountants that don't do well with money, and there's a lot of them that do, but I don't think I learned personal finance through my accounting career.
No, and So I did business originally so I'm a science person, but I did business originally and I did my MBA, and like, you still don't learn personal finance whatsoever. Like I can prepare any like financial statements you need, but it teaches you how to do the checks and balances, but it doesn't teach you how to save. And I think that's right. The biggest part is you kind of want to break even almost, or like have a loss on those. But in real life, like you don't want to run your finances like you do so I feel yeah. like it'd be very easy yeah. for an accountant or any kind of financial person to, it does not necessarily translate into personal finances. And I think that's a big disclaimer. If you ever listen to Dave yeah. Ramsey, which is kind of what I grew up on a little bit around here, was he always talked about like the broke accountant or the broke doctor, or people that are trying to live the lifestyle for their job. Because I was 100% the person that went out and financed like the $30,000 car when I got my first job out of college. So
yeah, I know we did too. I mean, I look back, I was cleaning out my office a couple of years ago, maybe last year. And I found some like, you know, when we first got married, like car payments. And mm-hmm. I was saying to myself, oh my God, we were paying that much money for a car every month. We were barely making any money. How do we make it? How do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so been there, done that. We've made tons of mistakes. You know, like I always say, don't make the same mistake twice.
Right.
One of my big next goal with my kind of concept, you know, Money to Feed is I'm trying to get into the local schools. I had a couple of schools already lined up because of COVID, though. Obviously, they got canceled. But I'm trying to get more into the schools to attack, you know, to get to the spots where, you know, kids are old enough to know better. You know, maybe like junior, senior year students, get them kind of teach them a little bit more about money. And then hopefully if I ever make money, you know, YouTubing or anything else that I do with this stuff, right. is I'm going to probably try to create like a scholarship fund and try to do as many, you know, maybe do like scholarships, you know, kind of legacy type stuff. Right. So we'll see.
That'd be awesome. Like you get a scholarship if you promise to not take out student loans or something.
Yes. It's got to be something, you know, you write an essay.
Some kind of like
pledging financial you will never get into like overwhelming debt.
Yeah. You're not going to be the person that financed the car like we did. But look back at my first job and I financed myself a car, and then I also paid extra for parking so I could park in my building. And like the amount of money I was probably spending a month to not only own the car, but then also to park it under my building was just astronomical. And like, I've really come a long way since the beginning.
Yeah. When I used to work in the city, and we had the same thing, parking under the building, and there used to be so much money. I used to park about a mile and a half away, and people would always joke with me because you could park up there for free.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'll get my steps in.
Yeah, they even had shuttles, like, but this parking lot was just so far away, and for some reason I thought that was a need at the time, and way from thinking that was normal. And right now, do you guys know what I'm guessing you track your savings rate? I think you talked about that recently in a blog post, is aiming for that 50% savings rate. Are you guys above that, or are you similar?
Yeah, we're above it. I mean, I think I'm like, last check was probably around, you know, after tax, clipping around 60% savings rate.
Yep.
You know, I think anything, the goal has always been to have it over 50%. Mm-hmm. And so people say, geez, you know, okay, so how do you get there? So, you know, the biggest thing is I always think of, you know, just keeping a constant budget and don't let lifestyle creep get to you, because mm-hmm. that's what's going to eat your earnings, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people that make a lot of money and, you know, they're just always buying stuff. So, you know, just think that when those purchases are eating, I mean, you're only going to make so much money while you're on this earth. So if you're going to spend it and not save it and create wealth, then, you know, that's a choice that somebody makes. But, you know, what's funny now, especially like we just recently, not too long ago, paid off our mortgage. So we're 100% debt free. And it was almost weird when we told people like, hey, you know, we paid off the mortgage. And it was like, you know, it wasn't like a congratulation type story. It was very odd feeling.
Yes. Yeah. Telling people not inside the community, because you have so many people cheering you on around here to do big things like that. But then in real life, no one cares about mortgages. And
it's weird because it's like, I feel like a lot of people think that a mortgage is just something that's never meant to be paid. You know, it's just almost like rent. Okay. This is how much I pay for my house. And, you know, I mean, you know, if you get a 15-year mortgage, you know, you should pay it off in 15 years. If you get a 30-year mortgage and that's all you can afford, then pay it off in 30. You know, don't be 40 years later, 45 years later, and you still have a mortgage, you know.
And most people move around so much, they tend to have a mortgage for life.
That and the refinancing, you know, a lot of people say, hey, you know, and I always tell people, hey, when you refinance, cut down the years, because use that lower interest rate not to start the clock again on a 30. You know, maybe that's a great way to get into a 15, and they'll say, well, you know, it's another $300. And I would say, yeah, but 250 of that is principal. That's just another savings account. You know, look at it that way. So I always think that between a mortgage and leased cars, people just really think about it totally different. You know, like it's not debt or it's just something that, you know, to have. But, you know, it's, I think it just boils down to, at the end of the day, to your mindset, you know, and for me, debt has always bothered me. You know, I remember my first credit card and I bought something and it was like $500 and I was paying 20-something% in interest. And I was like, okay, why am I paying this interest, you know, to buy something that I really didn't need?
Yes. And so I liked, so when you calculate your savings, right, do you do your net?
Yeah, I'll do it on both. I do it net and gross.
Okay.
But yeah, I want to be over 50% net.
Yeah. Because some people, I think, Save My Sense does 50% gross, and I'm like, my gross is terrible. Like but I do it after everything. So for people that don't know, your gross would be like all, like what your employer says they pay you before you do any taxes or anything, like your total, the big number on your pay stub. I always do it on the net, which is what actually gets deposited in my bank account. So for people that are listening and want to know how we kind of break it down, that's how I do it. Taxes are already taken out. Insurance premiums are already taken out. My 401k contributions are already taken out. And then I just do what I have like deposited in my bank account, what I do to save. I don't know how that compares to what you're doing. You do both.
Yeah, I calculate both, but yeah, I pretty much do it the same way. I mean, you know, especially if you have if you have paying a lot of in insurance and, you know, there's a lot of tax coming out, let's say this, you know, you make $1,000, well, 30% of that may come out in taxes.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's a big whack. So, and that can get discouraging. I think sometimes if I think of it on a gross basis, so I like to think of it as to what I can control. You know, I like to obviously max out my 401k. I've always done that, you know, consistently. And then when you have the money, you know, you have that net paycheck or whatever you're doing for a living, you know, it's how are you spending that money?
And right.
That's the point. That's the part that you can really control.
Right. So, because I like to set it and forget it on the pre-tax stuff. And then I want to be like a good steward of the money that gets put in my bank account. I get paid twice a month. Being a good steward of that money, I guess that's a good way to look at it, is what you directly have control over. Because you could choose to spend all of that, or you could choose to say, okay, I'm saving even pre, you know, tax, but I also want to do better personally. And so that's what I focus on too. And I never thought about it as like this is the resources you have direct control over that aren't really automated. And I think that's I like that perspective on it.
Yeah. When I was younger, you know, I mean, my parents, you know, I came from a household at times, you know, for variety of reasons, we lived paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, I think when we first got married, we were paycheck to paycheck, didn't have, you know, we weren't making a lot of money. And, you know, I just never liked the way that felt, you know, even as a child, I didn't like it. And I think one good lesson my parents always did is they really had like a, you know, a frank conversation about money when there were struggles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cause then you kind of said, okay, you know, and I think that's one of the things I struggle sometimes with my kids, you know, it's like, I don't want them to feel like they're on easy street, you know?
Right.
So maybe that helps me with the savings rate, because mm-hmm. I don't tend to be a spender. I don't like when they waste money, you know? So I just, on my YouTube channel, I did a video, literally 90 seconds long. It's about, one thing my mother always said is that, hey, this, you know, a lot of this stuff is the Alka-Seltzer effect. You know, when you want to buy something, you're like, I want it. And it's like, kind of like Alka-Seltzer, you know, it foams up. If you just waited a day, 2 days, by the time that foam goes away, you realize you didn't need it. So, you know, I try to do that approach a little bit. And I never liked living tight. I always have a fear. I feel like sometimes I'm insecure. You know, I've never, you know, knock on wood, I've never been laid off or fired from my job, but I've always been insecure, and I've always said, hey, what happens if I lose my job? You know, now what? And, so that's really helped a lot.
Yeah. And I think I've felt that too, is especially during COVID, I think it's given a lot of people a gut check as to how comfortable you're feeling in your job. And at any day, what happens if you're furloughed or, you know, laid off and, you know, there's unemployment, but for how long, and then refinding a job and the field you're in. I think this whole situation will make a lot of people rethink. And maybe I've heard some people kind of considering their personal finances, because I think that most people kind of go through life paycheck to paycheck because it's normal with car loans or car leases and a house payment and, you know, all the things on payments. And then when you hit that emergency, it's just terrifying. And I think that's the difference when you have your financial house in order, is if you have like a surprise, like $1,000 medical bill, or your husband gets laid off, it's way less scary to be prepared and to have like savings and less debt versus, you know, like, wouldn't it be nice to be excited about, you know, your husband being laid off for 8 weeks versus terrified?
And I remember that in the Great Recession, you know, where we would go in, you know, I think in the course of a year, you know, I had just gotten this job and it was the job I really wanted. I finally had taken a step in my career, and I was working at a Fortune 500 company in their tax department, and it's a great company to work for. So I'm there a year, the Great Recession hits, and I remember like every 3 months you'd walk into an email saying, hey, for the next 2 days there's layoffs, and if you hear from your supervisor by 3 o'clock on a Friday, then you're good, you know, you're still employed. And it was, you know, that was like a whole year. I was like, okay, I have to be prepared for a job loss, because it's just a matter of time before it happens. So I think along the way, my journey was probably like a lot of, you know, I'm glad the Great Recession happened when it happened, because I think that I always, you know, I think in the last 10 years, people say, you know, you've had a good economy, you've had a good stock market, you've had a good boom, and things look easy. So a lot of millennials haven't like suffered a downturn.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come, I mean, they usually, you know, they're, it's a lot quicker on the way down than the way up. So I think that, you know, those are good lessons to, you know, look around, see where you are in your finances, make your moves, and just make sure that, you know, you're ready for the next event.
2008 happened right as I was graduating high school. And so I'm kind of the older side of the millennials. And it was really interesting because I chose my career path because I'm on Fortune 500 and like all these different things, looking at companies and careers with high growth because I just wanted to be employed. And like a solid, yeah. Because there always are careers that are still growing exponentially, even in bad times. I'm going to pick a job off this list. I don't care what it is. We're going to figure out which one was best. But it was just, again, like that insecurity piece of things. And I think that's really unusual because everyone else was, you know, take out student loans. Like, what kind of job will make you happy? And I'm like, okay, I like to spend money. I like to shop. And I need something to support my lifestyle. And I need to have a job. So it's like I'm the weirdest job seeker ever.
You know, I mean, I'm a first generation immigrant. And, you know, one thing between like living, you know, being an American and maybe living in other parts of the world, you live in a country with the greatest amount of opportunity. You literally could do anything. I mean, you know, I've seen people go from nothing to multimillionaire, you know, whether it's, you know, YouTube, whether it's, you know, this is right up your alley, you know, real estate.
Yes.
Or, you know, people, or change a career, you know, go back to school. I mean, I was teaching a couple of years ago, I was teaching at night at a local university, and, you know, I would have students older than me, you know, with kids, and someone might have been an engineer and now they want to be an accountant. So there they are, you know,
yep.
Learning something new. So, I mean, there's no reason why, you know, somebody, why you would fail or not fail, but you live in a country of abundance and opportunity and really need to, you know, get after it.
Especially in the age of the internet, I think. Sometimes it's okay. So you probably don't know this movie, but anyway, there's a movie called The Devil Wears Prada, which is probably not up your alley because it's about women's fashion. But if you watch The Devil Wears Prada, at some point they're like, the main character is just like struggling to meet this lady's expectations. And I just remember him looking at her being like, are you really trying that hard? And I think about that sometimes where, like I've been DIYing a lot of real estate stuff and I picked real estate kind of the same way where I'm like, okay, I'm not that entrepreneurial in the traditional sense where I'm gonna like invent a product or come up with a company and like make all this money, but I know I want to support my lifestyle. So if I lose my job, I'm safe. And so I was like, real estate is a easy way to get there. And you can learn most things you need to know off of online or a YouTube video. And then you think you're doing pretty well. And then I was talking to, I don't know if you follow him, but there's a guy called Real Estate Old School. And he's just hilarious. Like he does videos every single day with this cigar and just like talks about his real estate experience. And he was saying too, he's like, I didn't know anything about social media, but I learned I could learn anything I needed to do to build my channel off of YouTube. And it made me think, and he's like, and I told him too, I'm like, I have been working harder to get better at like some DIY stuff in real estate. And he's like, you can learn everything you need to know. You can learn how to fix the toilet. You can learn how to, you know, make furniture all off of YouTube. And I'm like, this, you know, older gentleman, like this 65-year-old, 70, like in that age range is recommending that I search on YouTube more often. I'm like a terrible millennial, but it's amazing. if you have the hustle and drive and you're determined to figure it out, you can figure it out, but you limit yourself in your head with what you think you can do. Yeah. And so,
yeah, there's a lot of the, you know, I'm too old or, hey, you know, I don't want to learn something new. And, you know, you can always, there's so much more you can do.
Right. And I think your time is really valuable too. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about your investing because you are not into real estate as much, but you've done such an interesting job with your investments. And so because I'm a big index fund person, which you are as well, but you've gotten even to like the next level, I feel like with investing where you're choosing your portfolio and things. So kind of break down, I like talking about like the traditional like 401k versus like your brokerage accounts and kind of talk about how you structure all of your things.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I started, you know, when I graduated college, I had a negative net worth of like $60,000.
Yep.
You know, student loans, like everybody else. I had a car payment. I did, you know, as Dave Ramsey would say, the stupid tax.
Yeah.
So, you know, been there, done that. And then early on, I just started investing $100 every month into an S&P 500 fund. And that was really just to get in that habit of investing. And as I paid down debt and I had more money, I put more into investing. when I got like a tax refund, I put it into my investment accounts. Any extra cash, I just threw it into investing. And then when the loans were gone, you know, I just started building a general portfolio. I mean, in terms of the 401k, I've tried to max it as much as I can. I mean, obviously early on was difficult to do because I didn't make all that much money. But I always got at least the company match. You know, that was free money. Even with the loans, I always did that because I got that. For me, that was 100% return of my money annually.
Yeah, you're not going to get a better return than that. I think that's the thing where Dave Ramsey kind of misses the boat on that. And I think you talked about that last time, was losing out on the match is a terrible idea.
So. Yeah, I do think, I mean, I understand what he's trying to teach, because a lot of this is mindset. So it's like, you know, if you struggle with paying off debt, just slay the debt and then go and start building your wealth. But I just think that, you know, I would rather pay 7% interest on a student loan. And so I would rather pay 7% interest on a student loan and get 100% return on my 401k.
Yeah.
So if I just do the spread, here's my account one, you know, that's a 93% rate differential. So, you know, I'll take that, you know, every day of the week. So, and in terms of my 401k, it's always been, you know, either mutual funds early on, index funds. I tend to allocate them between five groups of investments, which is S&P 500 fund, a large cap growth fund. I do small caps. I used to do it, but I don't do that anymore. I just think it's been underperforming. Mm-hmm. So I just tend to split it a little bit more into like large cap growth. So that's always my 401k.
Yeah, because international, how long has international been underperforming? It's been like the last 12 or 15 years.
10 years. Yeah.
So I way also got long. Out of my international as well. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
You took that out of your portfolio. So
yeah.
Because I just couldn't, it was just always causing drag in my portfolio. And I know people like the diversification of not being all US, but I think so many companies are heavily invested. Like, I don't know if there is an S&P 500 company that isn't also diversified in other countries. And so I just have a hard time doing the international with the returns they're getting. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah, they totally are. And you know, a lot of the reason why the US market has been outperforming is because it's a lot easier for, you know, non-US folks to invest in our own markets, you know,
right.
So as that's been outperforming, more money's coming in and it continues to outperform. So that was the 401k. And in terms of everything else, you know, I have an IRA, traditional IRA. I don't have a Roth because when I left one job, I transferred that to a traditional IRA. And then the Roth IRA for us was like, you know, that was a new concept when I started investing. And it was a little popular in the beginning, but it wasn't crazy popular. It was, there was a lot of debate about it, whether it was good or bad. So for me, I just kept investing my 401k at that point. I would put some money in my Roth, but then I would always have a taxable brokerage account.
Mm-hmm.
And I just use that to invest on my own. So, you know, I think if I look at my overall portfolio right now, I actually was looking at it this morning, but, I'm at 80%, in stocks. I'm about 10% in bond, and I'm about 10% in cash. The cash side is a little high, probably a little higher than I'd like it to be right now, but that's just, you know, me kind of safeguarding at this point. And, you know, if the market goes down again, like it did in you know, when coronavirus first started, then I will put more of that cash into stocks.
Right. It's not a bad place
like
to be right now. Any uncertainty, stack cash.
right. And I like to, and again, I'm going to go with, because a lot of people say, geez, you know, having cash is a mistake, should be 100% in stocks. And, you know, that is true. But I'm going to go back to what I always say is that you have to invest in what you're comfortable with, what you understand, and your risk tolerance is, you know, what you're comfortable with. Like, I'm okay missing the next 100,000 up, but it would crush me to see my portfolio go down by 250.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
a lot of people learned how they can stomach a drop after this whole thing, because I think in your state, like my standard S&P 500 accounts, like in my 401k and my IRAs, I think took a 25 to 30% hit like the rest of the market. So watching that fall has been interesting to see how everyone kind of in this community reacts to it. There's a lot of fire bloggers that are very quiet right now.
And when I first started investing, you know, you would have mutual funds, and because we didn't have exchange traded funds, and you know, you would pay for, you know, to be in a mutual fund where it was a really good return on your invest, you know, would outperform, let's say this person would outperform the S&P 500. And that's always been my goal, you know, to outperform the S&P 500. You know, I've outperformed it in the last, I think in the last 7 years since I've been taking on a little bit more of my investments. And some of it has just been by being in a balanced portfolio, switching between stocks and bonds, because bonds have done really well. And also layering some single stocks, you know, so we talked about, I had done a YouTube video about my three-prong investments when I pick a stock. And I love stocks to pick. So it's a powerful brand. So if I just show you a picture of a brand, do you know who that company is? And actually for work, on every Friday, we have, there's a guy that's doing a Zoom quiz. And one of the Zoom quizzes was 20 brands. So he would just show you the picture and he would, you'd have to write down who that, what company that was. And I was like, wow, that's just like what, you know, what I think of, you know, powerful brand. It's a company that grows and it's innovative. And most importantly for me is that you should know the name of the CEO. So, you know, some of those, that has led to some great investments. I invested in Facebook early on. I've had an Apple investment for years. I bought a little bit of Tesla in the beginning. I sold it way too early, like everybody else, because I was like, ah, this is just a car manufacturer.
Yeah.
You know, it's really expensive, but it's more than that.
Yeah.
So, and that's really been my trick, you know. And for anybody that wants to replicate something like that, I always say, hey, start at the beginning, understand what's, how the stock market works, understand when a stock market is expensive, when it's not expensive. And then, you know, try to look at some single stocks investments if you want to try to outperform, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's very interesting because I've never heard anyone talk about knowing the CEO, but then it's interesting because that's kind of, if you read Warren Buffett's like investor letters, he talks a lot about the CEO and who's leading the company and what direction the leadership is taking companies in. And, but I don't think that's a common thing you hear about online is looking at the CEO and considering the way in which the company is moving.
Yeah. And that just gets down to, you know, to knowing the management team, you know, and, which is probably the most important thing. You know, I tell people, you know, someone will say, hey, well, you know, your investment strategy is not going to pick out the next, you know, small company that's going to grow. And I say, I'm like, of course it did. It would, because everybody knew Jeff Bezos from the beginning. Everybody knew about Elon Musk from the beginning. Everybody knew about Mark Zuckerberg from the days he was in Harvard. So yeah, you just have to do your homework. And a lot of the great investments are literally right in front of you, you know, like you see everybody doing TikTok now and VIP Kid. Well, that's Tencent, you know, most of that is held by it. So, you know, invest in something like that. So I always tell people, I said, hey, to pick good stock winners is look at what kids are doing, because they tend to, you know, pick some great investments.
Yes. And so what way do you do research? Are you just Googling different companies and learning about their CEOs? Is there a certain spot you go to?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just been kind of like, you know, just trying to pay attention to what's going on around me, you know, and if there's a new technology that's coming through. I mean, I tell people that we're in a technology revolution. So, you know, what are the things that are really changing our lives right now that, you know, you can invest in? You know, what's a company that's going to transform? Like, I just bought some shares not too long ago, probably my next new, you know, my next new investment. And again, I don't invest in a lot of separate companies. I tend to have no more than 10.
Yep.
But I just started buying maybe like three, four, I think it was in October when they went into IPO, two recent picks. One was Virgin Galactic, just trying to, you know, and this is high risk. This is obviously very risky.
This is advanced. This is things that I'm afraid of, but really it's fascinating to learn about. These are.
So Virgin Galactic, the idea is that you know, we're going to fly differently. We're not going to get on Southwest anymore, or, you know, or we will, but we won't get on United Airlines and go to China. We're just going to go on Virgin Galactic, go through space, and in 1 hour, you'll go from JFK to China. And then the other one that I love, it's one of those things that it's all in front of you, and this has really been learning about blogging, is Pinterest, mm-hmm. you know? So everybody says Pinterest is a must. You got to use Pinterest. You got to use Pinterest. Volumes on Pinterest, and if you look at their volumes, their monthly users are high. People are constantly using Pinterest. They're doing a lot of new things. They just release stories like everybody else. So those are my two most recent things that I've bought.
For beginners who are listening to this and they're terrified of choosing, you know, having to pick stocks of 10 companies, where do you think like a new investor should start besides doing the match? Do you recommend, so if you're doing your match in your 401k or your 403b, after that, do you usually go to IRAs or are you thinking more maxing out your retirement accounts?
Yeah. You know, I would say that, you know, obviously you get your match. I do like maxing out the 401k before the Roth. Mm-hmm. Some people don't. You know, but I would always say max out. My only thing about the Roth is, you know, it's after tax money. So if you're in, you know, let's say you're paying 30% worth of income tax right now, if you go into a Roth, you're going to give up that deduction. And I understand that when the money comes out, it's tax-free. So right. There's a little bit of that concept to think about. My biggest thing I don't like about the Roth is I always hear people say, oh, I love the Roth because when I put money in, within mm-hmm. 5 years, I can take money out and it's tax-free. But of course, because that's just your contributions that you can take back out.
Right.
So it's too much. It's easy access. And that is, I've seen a lot of people take money out of Roths for all the wrong reasons. So, you know, I think it just goes to, you know, I think if you go online, there are 15 people telling you 15 different ways to invest.
Right.
My thing is, you know, for you to get your 10% or so rate of return, go into an S&P 500 fund, then, you know, buy ETFs that outperform. Maybe you want to get into a little bit more of a technology type fund, get into that. And then, you know, think about single stocks. I mean, single stocks are great when they perform, but if they don't, they're going to drag you down. So, you know, there is some of that you have to make sure you're picking the right investments.
Right. And single stocks are risky. I mean, I stay in all index funds and there's a million different kinds of index funds now. And again, I get choose index funds because they're cheap. They don't have very many fees. And I think it's always interesting to talk to like people like you who remember there was a time before Roth IRAs and there was also this time before index funds. And it's something really important because I think nowadays we've always had this around and that's kind of where everyone gets the hype. But I think it's also because they're somewhat newer. And I think that's why Dave Ramsey probably talks about mutual funds.
Right. Yeah, he's an old timer. He still talks about those. But yeah, I mean, I think he has the same thing. I mean, he's, you know, he has four types of investments you should do, you know. He has the concept that you should be 100% in stock. You know, my risk tolerance is I don't like that. You know, I think the other thing is when you're looking at investment or taking investment advice from others, you know, look at what they've done. Just look at, you know, I always hear people like before it was, you know, Bitcoin. Everybody was talking about Bitcoin. Nobody talks about Bitcoin anymore. Everybody's talking about the cruise lines now. So
there's still a few Bitcoin hype people out there. I'm like, I'm not sure how I feel about it. I know some people have made a killing in Bitcoin. I don't like to invest in things I'm not comfortable with. And so to me, buying the whole stock market is really appealing. But I think if I had the time to sit down and was passionate about stocks, I could definitely pick out a few companies that I think, you know, watching what all the younger kids are doing on social media and kind of seeing where their interests are. Like, I mean, my generation was like where Facebook kind of came up. And so I'm like, if people knew that Facebook was a big thing where everyone's living, that's where you'd want to be. Today, my generation is on Instagram and a little bit on Twitter.
Even some of the ones that I've missed is like, you know, I was thinking like Roku, you know, everybody has a Roku stick, you know, that's been a one that's been a fire. I mean, Zoom, you know, I used to tell people when Zoom first went public, you know, my dad was like, oh, you got to buy Zoom. And I'm like, oh, Zoom, it's just a video conferencing, you know, but it's taken off. My biggest thing is do what you're comfortable with and just hold it for the long term. You know, like I think of my Apple investment. You know, a lot of times people trade out when they're up 30%. Wow, 40%, 50%. You're not, you know, to get those really, you know, crazy gains, you just be a long-term holder. You know, it's boring, it's not sexy, but you have more of an opportunity to build wealth by buying and holding than by trading. I mean, that's been proving time and time again.
Yeah, there's so much research that says day traders and those people trying to catch the next wave do a terrible job. But if you pick good quality companies that to buy and hold over a long time, like, makes me warm and fuzzy to think about versus the day trading people or the people that are popping in and out of airlines right now. Have you done anything different with your own portfolio because of COVID?
No, not really. I mean, you know, I have a little bit more cash only because, you know, just from a rebalance. I mean, I did rebalance back in March, but that was just a systematic rebalancing. You know, I still invest every month the same amount of money, consistent. Mm-hmm. I don't really worry too much. I mean, if you look at a graph of the S&P 500 over 30 years, I mean, yeah, you can blow up, you know, 3 years at a time and see big spikes, but just, you know, the slope is up. So just, you know, systematic approach. You know, as I get a little bit older, I mean, I'm 40 something, so 46, 47. As I get older, I'll probably get a little bit more conservative, but aside from that, just, you know, just be automatic invest. Automatic investing is the way to go, and just put it in there, leave it in there. It's like I tell people it's like a slow cooker, you know, just
yeah, cook. Yep. Cook over the long term. Yeah.
Right.
Any other ways that you deviate a bit from Dave Ramsey? Because I think that's how I originally kind of grew up on Instagram with this account, was, you know, doing our debt payoff and things. And so there's so much power with getting your personal finances in order. But do you like his 15% retirement approach or his pay off the house approach? How do you balance kind of the rest of his principles?
So I grew up with Susie Orman.
Yes. Yeah.
And she was great. I mean, she used to have a show like on Saturday nights, and I didn't go out on a Saturday until her show was over. It was like at 9 o'clock, from 9 to 10 o'clock at night. I'd be like, oh no, I have to watch Susie Orman.
That's awesome.
And I understand. I mean, I've read his book, The Total Money Makeover. I've read, there's one that he wrote with his daughter about teaching kids about money. So I think those are great reads. I do like his approach. I would say the only one I would struggle with is baby step one, where he says, you know, $1,000 emergency fund.
Yep.
I don't feel like that's enough, but I understand why he says 1,000, because it's all about wins, right? So it's about, you know, not getting discouraged. Right. You know, so like, if I look at other things that we may be doing, you know, I might look at something and say, geez, you know, I'm working so hard and I'm not really growing in this side. And somebody else is doing it and they're killing it. So I get discouraged. And that's what the baby steps are about. You know, it's about, okay, put $1,000, boom, you've done the first thing, go move on to the next one, you know, pay off the bills, the loans. And I understand the debt snowball from smallest to largest and knock those out. When I paid off my debt, I did it based on interest rate. And then I consolidated at one point and just paid, you know, did the avalanche, just threw it all in one pot and just crushed it. I think a lot of times if you're lining up the debts from small to largest, it's getting those quick wins and moving on and grabbing traction. But, you know, you might be leaving a little bit of money on the table by not paying it based on the interest rate. But I think that's, you know, I mean, I think obviously he's got a solid system. He's very successful. And, you know, I always tell people that, hey, just do something. You know, it's better than doing absolutely nothing and just thinking it's going to go away. Right. I always tell people you know, I've coached a couple of people that have reached out to me on Instagram and I've said, oh yeah, you know, I'll coach you for a few sessions. You know, don't worry about it. You don't have to pay me. I'll just do it, you know, something that I can pay back. And, you know, I tell people, I said, just create a debt-free community, or, you know, create an Instagram account and, you know, get the kids involved and all this stuff. So, you know, that would be, I mean, I do like the Dave Ramsey methods. You know, I think, I just think that you just have to, the most important thing is just build a plan, you know, have a start date, a finish date, and just do everything you can in your power to, you know, burn off the debt.
Right. How fast do you guys pay off your house?
Well, when we really said, I want to pay it off. I paid it off in 46 months. It was like $150,000 to go.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. Good job.
Yeah. And that was,
but again, no personal debt.
Yeah. And that was just, you know, like, you know, just putting your mind to it, you know, mm-hmm. like, at one point I was teaching at a local university. So I took that money and I put it on the debt. When I got a bonus at work, I just put it on that. We cut back as much as we can within our own budget. So I look at my budget now. I'm starting to transition from, okay, what do we have to spend monthly to like, what do we have to really spend monthly, you know, to kind of try to cut down working and all this stuff. So, you know, when you have that mindset, I just think it's the mindset of, all right, let's just pay it off because I'm so sick of paying this mortgage, and you just do it, you know. You look back and you're like, how the hell do we do that?
Right.
How do we do that? We didn't do that before. And it's like, you know, you just don't have the mindset to do it.
Was it on a 30-year term originally? Or did you do the 15-year mortgage?
No, I had a 15. So originally when I first bought the house, I did a 30. Mm-hmm. And then the rates went down. We went down to a 15. And then, you know, within the 15, I think I had like another 12 to go. And I just said, oh, I'm not paying this for another 12 years.
Yep. Do you also plan to save for kids' college? Are you cash flowing that? What are your plans for your two kiddos?
So we save 50% of our income. I think earlier on we spoke on about a couple of money mistakes. So one was, you know, buying this house. I hated it. And I lost about $25,000.
Yes.
The second one is we probably haven't been, you know, in terms of saving, and again, I'm going to go back to when I kind of grew up, you know, like a 529 plan wasn't around. Although I do have it on my goals this year to open up one for my youngest son, cause he still has enough time to kind of work his way through that. I remember during the Great Recession, you know, people that had the 529 plan, all this stuff was like in either bonds or stocks. And then those investments really went down in value. And you saw a lot of people lose a lot of value in those 529 accounts. So I still have those Great Recession scars. And, you know, 20 years ago, I would hear from people saying, hey, you can borrow for college, you can't borrow for retirement. And, you know, probably another bad quote out there, but, you know,
it's not a bad quote though, because I feel like some people, there's a lot of people that are like prioritizing their kids' college and not doing retirement. And I feel like that's a huge mistake given the number of people that are forced to retire early. Like, I think it's a crazy number, like 70% of people have to retire at an age earlier than they expected because of a health reason or a family member's health and needing to care for them. And so I think given that number, I don't think it's bad advice, but again, I think some people also really deprioritize doing kids' college because of it. So I guess it depends if you fall in one extreme or the other with the situation. So.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I mean, I always had the idea that, you know, I'm going to live off the interest dividend income off of my portfolio. Mm-hmm. And before I actually retire, you know, I will generate enough income in the portfolio to pay for college. Or I'll be 100% debt free. And then I'll just have to work to cash flow college. I also believe that your kids should have a little bit of stake in your financial plans. I plan to, I'm paying half of my kids' college education. They can pay the other half. So I have two kids. So the way I've always looked at it is I really only have one to pay for. And, you know, I tell a lot of people like, hey, if you can't afford school, you know, maybe go to a community college and bang out the, you know, few courses there. And then go to a regular college. And, you know, it's funny, a lot of people pre-coronavirus are saying, oh, I'm not going to a community college. And now you see all these kids that want to go to community college because they don't want to do home learning, you know? So, you know, again, it just goes down to your mindset.
Right, exactly. And there's lots of debate on kids' college. I'm always very pro-kids' college, but I was one of the very fortunate my parents paid for my schooling. And I feel like I turned out fine. Like, I don't feel this like crazy sense of entitlement and like drank beer the whole time. Like, I still graduated with like two majors and all this stuff and worked my butt off and really searched on jobs that were employable because my parents like beat it into me. Like, you will have a job after college and it's going to be one that pays you to compensate for how much we spent on your degree. And so again, it's like lots of conversations with your parents where they really teach finances. And I think I was surrounded by people whose parents were like, pick a college that like brings you joy. And the campus was pretty. And mine were like we looked at one community college and my parents were the ones we, or no, it was a private college. I went on one private college tour and we're on the tour and they're talking about like the financial piece. And they're like, they talk about how much tuition is. And my mom goes, a year? Or is that for all four? And it was just hilarious because my parents are actually like the, like, so I'd be second generation FIRE if I do it. So they've been retired for a really, really long time, very early retirees. And they were fully retired, could cash flow my college and still like, were the only family freaking out about the price tag and being like, you're not going here. And we were those people. And so I feel like we had very realistic money conversations. And so I think that doesn't have to be lost.
I think that's the most important thing, you know, and it's, you know, I mean, I haven't gotten to the college part, but, you know, just from seeing people, I think it's just, you have this idea that, you know, if you, the higher, you know, the big name schools are always the best way to go. You know, I think it depends what you want to do. You know, if you want to be a doctor, you know, a high-end doctor, yeah, I mean, you have to go to a very good college. If you want to be a top-notch, you know, I deal with a bunch of attorneys, tax attorneys, regular attorneys. You know, some of them have gone to really good schools and they're bright individuals. Some have gone to regular, you know, state colleges and they're, you know, the one that spent $200,000, $300,000 on college is making the same amount as the person that did it with, you know, $50,000, $60,000. So, you know, I mean, I think if you have a certain profession, you have a certain school, the road is probably easier. But I think if not, I mean, you can fight your way through.
Right.
My thing is this, I'll pay for half. If you want to go to a private school and it costs $20,000 more, then you got to pay that extra $20,000, you know, and it'll be their decision.
Yeah. I was also on the four and done path. Like the victory lap wasn't an option as well. So tell that to your, make sure your kids know that too. If they can graduate in 3 years, even better. I kind of wish I would have done that.
So. The other thing I see a lot too nowadays is, you know, people go and they get their bachelor's and they stay in school and get their master's. You know, a lot of times if you get a job, that master's is paid for by your employer. Like my master's got 100% paid for by my employer. I mean, that was a $30,000, you know, benefit for 4 years. So, you know, you can do it part-time. You just get that paid for. I mean, I've seen people get maybe, you know, they graduate and then they want to go to law school. You know, they go up to an employer and say, hey, listen, you know, I have an interest in going to law school, you know, and I know we have in-house attorneys. Let's see if we can negotiate. And, you know, they've had either the whole school paid for and then, a job when they finish or half or something, you know, you can always negotiate with your employer. I think that you can get just as much, you know, personal finance stuff. I like websites like, I love Morningstar. It's a very, I direct a lot of people that way. It's a basic investing website. They break things down well. You can look at any ETF and see what the holdings are. You can do your research there for free. And then just kind of stay on top of the news.
Yep. I love Morningstar also. I've directed a lot of people there and I feel like it gets very little hype and it's awesome because your expense ratios are there and I'm like the really easy and boring person. So all I care about is what's the lowest expense ratio, aka like what are your fees on your index funds and choose them that way.
And I love like their ranking, you know, their star, I think they call them the star rankings, you know, so let's say you're at work and you're looking at your 401k and you have 20 investments, you know, go on Morningstar, look for those investments and see how Morningstar ranks them. You know, they do a really good job ranking the funds.
And I love how it reviews all the holdings and at what percentage companies are in, because I think as a new person starting out, that makes it less scary for some reason to buy like some like big fancy word for a fund. And then you look at it and you're like, oh, there's Target and Amazon. Right. I literally use them every week. Okay. I'm not feeling as scared about it. These are buying pieces of a company. And so I think for new people that are terrified of the stock market, look at what you're holding. And if you find value in those companies and your friends all find value in those companies, it starts to feel a little less intimidating than the little ticker symbols. So for your very newbies in the beginning, looking at, you know, what is in a total stock market index or something, I think helps demystify the process a bit.
That's where you can jump off to a single stock you know, just look at the funds, see the funds that are doing really good. What are their, some of their good holdings, and then say, hey, you know, I might want to buy a little bit more of this single stock if you want to take that next step. Some people don't do single stocks. So, you know, you'd really don't, I mean, I enjoy the single stock trade, you know, buying and holding. But if you don't, I mean, you can't, as long as you're getting 7% return annually, you know, I mean, all the stats are out there. If you, you know, I remember in high school, I had this one teacher said, if you just save $2,000 a year and you get 10% return by the time you're 60, you're going to have $1 million, you know? And, I remember telling someone, like a friend, like, oh my God, that's nothing. You know, that's like $150 a month.
Right.
You know, $170 a month. I'm going to be a millionaire. And people are like, you're not going to be a millionaire.
You know? It's literally the math. It's not that hard. Yeah.
It just seems too good to be true.
It does. It really does. And it's very fine to be average with your stock market. And I mean, I'm diversified into real estate a little bit. So that's kind of my bonds.
Yeah.
So I'm 100% in stock market otherwise, but yeah, I think it's, you can fairly easily beat the returns or choose to diversify into something else. I think that's interesting. Right. That's how you structure your portfolio to get that higher return versus I do something else, which is fun.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. I just try to get a little bit more juice out of it. But again, I mean, if you're just doing the market return, you know, the S&P 500 has been what, 10, 12% with dividends for the last 30 years.
I mean, yes.
That's a very good return.
Right. So yeah, I think it's very interesting. That's two different ways to approach it to kind of get to the same goal. Are you guys trying to retire early? Are you work up?
I really enjoy what I do. So I myself, I am not looking to, you know, I'm not looking to retire early. I mean, for me, you know, my goal has always been to retire or to finish by the time I'm 55, you know. I can, honestly, I could do it today if I wanted to stop working and I'd be okay. We're okay. I can do it in 3 years from now. So I'm still going to work until I enjoy it, which is totally different mindset than having to go to work.
Yes.
Still work. So I think in our long range plan, you know, our goal is probably to like move to a warmer climate, cut back a little bit, but you know, right now I'm still young. We're only, you know, mid-40s. So, you know, I still like going to work. I get to travel with work. I get to do interesting things. I never have a dull moment.
And for those of you that don't know, I think me and Oscar have been trying to catch each other in airports because I also travel for my job. And so every time I'm in like an East Coast airport, I think I like send you a DM to be like, I'm in Newark today between this time and this time. Like, are you anywhere near there? Because you travel, I think more than me even. So.
No, I don't think so. I think you have me beat.
So far, the only person I've met in the debt-free community is Aunt Kara, because if you haven't followed her, but anyway, but I know you follow her too, because we all are travel
people. Yeah.
And we were actually on the same airplane together and didn't realize it. And she was sitting
there. Yeah, you were in a flight together, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And she goes, Sarah, I'm like, oh my gosh. And I only know your face from Instagram, but this is great. I'm glad you said hi. Oh, I want to wrap up by, I'm going to have you retell your house story. So we talked a little bit about this in a previous interview. So poor Oscar is going to have to repeat his house story, but the house was the one of the biggest or the early financial mistakes, right? Was buying a house that you just didn't think served you very well.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a house that, it was our second home. My wife really liked it. I didn't. I was trying to make her happy, and it was, you know, biggest financial mistake we've ever made. And you know, I'm gonna go back to the, you know, and I've hear a lot of people do this, you know, whether it's your kid, whether it's your spouse, you know, I feel like a lot of us spend money just to make somebody happy or to have that instant gratification, and that's probably some of the mistakes where the mistakes are being made. You know, I mean, I think a child shouldn't love you more or less because you buy them more things,
right?
So you know, but feels good. Or some people say, gee, I didn't have a lot of stuff when I was a kid, you know, and I want to spoil my kids rotten, you know. But that's just taken away from your own success. I remember when I was a kid, I only had like one toy at a time. You know, and I tell my kids that all the time. I said, hey, you know, like when I was your age, I only had one toy, and when that toy broke, guess what? If there wasn't enough money, there wasn't a second toy, so you had to take care of that one toy. You know. And now I look at my basement and I have to have a yard sale and there's stuff everywhere. We sold the house. That's like when the Great Recession was starting, you had these, you know, low interest rate mortgages, people borrowing 120% of the house value.
And as
the days progressed, the value, you know, as the days went on, the value of the house was going down. I mean, and
yeah,
we still got out somewhat at the top,
right?
It was still a painful experience.
Yeah,
and that one hurt a lot. I mean, I think that one hurt like for like, I'm not sure I'm still over it. It's been probably about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the first 5 years, you know, I just thought about every day how much money we lost.
So my last question that I've started to ask everyone, and it's a new one. So my first few interviews, I was asking one kind of question and I found a good one. So this year, so 2020, I decided actually the end of 2019, I started outsourcing things in my life that I don't enjoy. And so the first thing was like cleaning my house. I just absolutely hate it. Like I started hiring this cleaning lady for like $50 a week. She's a saint for doing that. I live in like 1,000 square feet, so it's nothing fancy. But I just decided it wasn't worth my time and I knew my time was better spent doing other things. Is there anything you outsource? Because you're really frugal. I wonder if you have much.
Yes. No. I there is nothing that I only outsource things that I don't know how to do. So anything that's electrical, plumbing, or the plumbing, we have a family member that does it. I don't get on ladders, but no, there's, I do my painting. I cut my own lawn. I rake my own leaves. No, there is nothing that, and again, it's, I'm to the other extreme.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go back to the fact that I still have a dollar from like, you know, almost nine from like March 1st in my pocket. But no, there's nothing. And those are the things, you know, I said earlier on saying, hey, I'm trying to do more things to kind of loosen up. But no, I just,
you do your own accounting, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I do my own tax work. Yeah. I do it all.
Well, thank you again for doing this interview.
Really that was a lot. Time. That was a lot of fun. Maybe next time we'll do it in person.
Maybe that'd be great. Maybe. Gosh, did you all just love this episode? I hope you're enjoying each of these podcasts as much as I am. If you are, please go subscribe to the podcast and spread the word by sharing your thoughts on Instagram. If you are not already aware, I'm pretty much obsessed with Instagram, so seriously, come find me. Instagram is the place where I'm going to announce every new podcast episode. I also share new products as I post them into my store. And I also am just going to be oversharing way too much about my personal life as a DIY landlord and a working boss mom. Thanks so much for listening.